serious for the Detroit Lions if they're already looking to add some kind of veteran to come in and maybe just be the stopgap for him with how well Decker played last year for that Detroit offensive line, that they have to go out and feel like they need to fill that need now. That's bad news when it comes to that injury front for the Detroit Lions.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know that. That's the truth. And unfortunately for Detroit, there's a lot of bad news, and it comes in a lot of years.
It's called playing football is what that is. By the way, before we let you get out of here, I know the big news in the world of sports yesterday is obviously the fight finally being announced between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. There really are – I was listening on my way in this morning. There really are people who think Conor McGregor can beat Floyd Mayweather Jr. in a boxing match.
Yes, there are. Yeah, like I said,
that is
and they
insane.
Really, and they really mean it. You know, we've come up with a lot of different metaphors, but this would be like saying that the number one doubles tennis player in the world is going to win the French Open in singles. Well, no, he's not. He's really good at his specialty in the sport of tennis, but he's not a singles player. And that's the same thing you'd say about McGregor or the world's best ping pong player suddenly deciding they can win the French Open and beat Rafael Nadal. I mean, there's big differences between MMA and boxing, and it's not just that you're I don't think Floyd Mayweather would beat a boxer worth his salt. He's definitely not going to beat the best one ever. That's just silly.
No, I mean, it's ridiculous. And the way I put it yesterday was I can't think of anything in sports that would be bigger as far as an upset than Conor McGregor coming in and beating Floyd Mayweather. That would be the biggest upset in the history of sports. And people kept saying, like, what about Buster Douglas? I was like, they both are boxers.
Yeah, no,
like,
this
at
is
least
much
they're
bigger.
Both doing the same thing. This is like, if the movie Rocky was actually about him being a wrestler who was really good in high school and had done it through college and was maybe even a national champion-level wrestler who got a shot at the heavyweight champion of the world and went the distance and beat the guy, and you'd be watching that movie going, this is Hollywood ridiculousness. That's only slightly more ridiculous than the idea of Conor McGregor beating Floyd Mayweather, who already took on a guy like Manny Pacquiao and trained that entire fight knowing that what was Manny going to try to do to him? Try to use that power that he's always had and corner him. That's what they think Conor McGregor's going to be able to do, who's never done it at that level, that Manny Pacquiao couldn't against this guy? That's insanity.
I don't understand how you can be a fan of the fight game, even MMA, and think that in the strict discipline of boxing against the tactical damn near unbelievability of Floyd Mayweather that you're going to win that fight. That doesn't make any sense. So
no,
anyway,
not much.
All right, we'll let you get to it. Jaguars Today starts right now.
All right, thank you very much. There he goes, Jeff Prosser. Dan Hicken, weekday mornings here on 1010XL from 6 to 10. We call it The Drill. Alongside Tyler is a part of that show now. Beef producing the show as I welcome in John Osier. What's going on, Johnny O?
It sounds like a lot of people involved with that show. Maybe I should get involved with that show.
I'm sure they'd have you. If you wanted to be, I'm sure they'd have you. Obviously, before we get into Jaguar stuff, the big fight news. Does that do anything for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really a fight guy anymore. I can't say I ever was, but of my generation, when I was a kid, you followed it much more than you do now. You had Ali sort of tailing off, and then you know there was boxing mattered when I was a kid. I have not followed it very closely since then. You know, you get caught up in the Tyson thing when I was in my 20s. You know, as Jeff said, I know enough about Mayweather and enough about McGregor and enough about the fight game to sort of not be very interested in it because I don't think it'll be very compelling. I mean, people watch it, but as Jeff said, there's no way that an MMA fighter can, under boxing rules, beat somebody as good as Mayweather. But,
no.
And that's my little two cents. And I know nothing about the sports, but
I will say, look, the two-month build-up's going to be fun. You know, like, it's going to be a lot of fun watching these guys go at each other in the media.
Right.
Like, that part of it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think it's going to, by the time we get to August, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to convince themselves there's something worth watching.
And I'm not one who necessarily, you know, I know very little about MMA, but I'm not one who necessarily discounts it. I think it is a powerful presence in sports.
No doubt.
And it's coming, and it's the young... These young kids, Tony, they love it. But it's definitely a factor, and it's probably the fight sport of the future, it sounds like. But if you're playing by Mayweather's rules, then you're playing by Mayweather. his rules.
Yeah, look, if it was the other way around, which Mayweather would never do, but if it was an MMA fight, then I'd be saying the same thing. He's not going to win this.
Right.
Like, he's not going to, because Conor's going to take him to the ground, and there's no way he can learn what he needs to learn in 2 months to compete doing that.
Well, especially when you're talking, and again, I have seen clips of Mayweather, but again, supposedly one of the great technicians, defensive box, you know, and a highly skilled all-time guy. If it was an average Joe, maybe, but this is a guy who's one of the best at what he's done. So it would be, as Jeff said, it would be like a doubles player in tennis thinking he could go beat Nadal or Federer in singles on their best surface. It just wouldn't happen.
No.
And there's many other, I mean, not just tennis, it's just how it is.
No, and I couldn't think of anything that would come close to it. I mean, I know the Miracle on Ice, and people were pointing out, like, Leicester winning the Premier League last year, and it's they're soccer teams. Like, I get it, they're not on the same level as a Man U or a Chelsea or whatever, but they do both play soccer. So in the end, it is kind of equal footing.
But, you know,
no one's done it yet.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of the deal. There's been a lot of guys that the commentary going into a fight against Floyd Mayweather was, well, he's got this power, so if he can reach him, and Floyd never lets him reach him. And the idea of a guy who's never done it in that ring at that level being able to do what all these other guys have not been able to do just seems a little absurd. But it'll be fun 2 months.
Sure.
And look, this is the most people have talked boxing in years. This is the most people have talked boxing since Floyd Mayweather fought Manny Pacquiao and made that a very boring fight to watch when everything was said and done.
You know, again, just not even pretending to be an expert, but it seems very high risk, low reward for the sport of boxing. Because Mayweather would happen to lose, it would be. I heard people say yesterday that it would kill a sport. I don't know about that, but it would certainly not be good.
No, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, so
the idea of that happening is so far beyond what I imagine is going to be the actual outcome of this fight. We got a couple months to talk about that, but it is the big news around the sports world that they finally got together. McGregor is going to take on Floyd Mayweather. As someone on the text line just asked, what is this, the Tony Atlas hour? What about Blake? We'll get to Blake here in just a moment as we get things started. We call it Jaguars Today.
With the third pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Blake Bortles, quarterback, Central Florida.
So a guy that's extremely talented, wanted to be here, and, you know, possesses all the physical traits we're looking for.
You know, he's everything we preach. He's a guy that's a highly competitive guy.
This guy loves Jacksonville, and he's excited about this. I'm pumped up to see all you guys here, man. That's great job.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
All right, John Osher with us for the first hour of the program today before he steps outside to watch the final day of veteran mandatory mini camp.
Yeah, probably the first 45 minutes because they moved practice 10:45.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you asked right before this, I mean, text line said, what about Blake?
Was what about him?
He couldn't beat Mayweather either.
No. He would not have a chance. Do we want to break down who would have the best chance on this roster against Floyd Mayweather?
There's guys who would last around. There's guys who would scrap.
Yeah. That would be about all they could do.
Yep.
Scrap. No one's going to beat Floyd Mayweather doing what Floyd Mayweather does. But is Blake Bortles good enough to compete with the other guys that are doing what he's doing in the league at the quarterback position?
Sure.
That's the big question for this team going into 2017. We had the opportunity to hear from the quarterback yesterday. We'll let you hear those comments a little bit later on. That leads into our fan feedback question of the day today. I don't know if you saw it, but on NFL.com, Adam Schein put up an article with the 10 players, I believe it was 10, the biggest make or break players in the league this year. So for their teams, basically, but he's ranking the top 10. He had Blake Bortles come in at number 2. On that list overall in the league, behind only Mike Glennon in Chicago, who's obviously scrapping to try to hold on to his job for a few months with him drafting Trubisky there in the first round. But look, everyone knows, the whole league knows that there's this big bullseye right now on Blake Bortles. And as far, the team can only go as far as Blake Bortles takes him. And we're again hearing him say the right things. Mm-hmm. But on top of him saying the right things, it's also added with that caveat from himself of, I know nothing that I say right now matters.
Sure. And he's, I think I came in yesterday after the show. We talked about it a little bit. The right attitude, the right approach, taking these next 5 weeks and maximizing what he can get out of them. That's all the stuff you got to do. And I thought we've had five practices, I think it's five, three OTAs and two mini camps, where we could sort of observe for a whole practice Blake. And I thought the first couple, I thought there were shaky moments and good moments. I thought the last few, he's looked a lot better. And I would say the same thing that I said after the first two or three, after the last two or three. I guess I'm not really putting a whole lot of stock in any of it in terms of accuracy right now. Yeah, you want to see him look okay, and he's looked okay. But it's all about what happens in training camp. And even more so, I never thought that the accuracy thing was 100% of the issue last year anyway. I thought it was part of it. I thought there was times that shaky moments brought him down. But it's still, as we've talked about, Tony, his decision-making, pocket presence, pre-snap reads, all that stuff. And then the what I call the tragic game-breaking interception. It's not tragic, it's football. But within the context of a game, that moment where it's like, ugh, well, that's it. They had a chance, and now that's it. That's what he's got to cut out. If he does this latter part, he can have moments of inaccuracy, and they're still going to be able to compete. But what he can't do is be more accurate and still have the other problems, because then the accuracy doesn't matter at all.
No, it doesn't. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day today, asking you, outside of Blake, because we get it, Blake is the most important piece to this thing, the biggest make-or-break piece for the Jaguars in 2017. But remove the quarterback from the equation, who's next on that list for you? Who is the next biggest make-or-break player for this Jaguars team going into 2017 for you? You can respond on Twitter, at 1010XLFatTony, at 1010XLTyler. Also on the Facebook page, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. We'll get into it. We'll talk a little bit more about Blake, get into some of the other storylines as the Jaguars, about an hour and a half away from wrapping up the offseason here, and then we won't see him again until basically the end of July when training camp is here. It's going to come up fast. Believe me, it'll be a fast 5 weeks, and we'll do what we can to entertain you in the meantime. But one more day on the field for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Fat Tony, John Osher here with you on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I'm Mercedes Lewis, and this is Jaguars Today live from Everbank Field.
All right, a couple segments with Johnny O right here on Jaguars Today. It is a Thursday. Mike Dempsey's still on vacation. He'll be back next week. He'll be up in New York for some serious fantasy something. They're going to go make him draft for a couple days is what I think is going to wind up happening. But a couple fantasy drafts for Mike early next week, so he'll be back in studio with us next Wednesday. We'll talk to him again on Monday. I'm not going to try to get him on the phone while he's on vacation. But as soon as he's back on the clock, we're giving him a call on Monday to see what's going on and some of his reaction to what's happened with the Jags is, again, today wrapping up the veteran mini camp and really the offseason. It's kind of done after today, and we've talked about it before, but the big thing you want from here to July is nothing.
Right. You want no headlines. You want, that's what you want. You want no headlines, no problems. You want them coming back. And there's a lot more of an emphasis these days on, in the last 4 or 5 years, you hear coaches and players now talking about what they have to do to maintain the conditioning and all that stuff that they've done in the off season to make sure that it carries over, to make sure that you don't leave on June 14th and come back in February shape. Mm-hmm. So that's what you want. That's their talk. That's not very exciting headline internet read, so you won't hear much about it. But that's what's going to be important to these guys.
Yeah, you'd like maybe a handful of videos from working out over there in California from Blake,
sure,
where you see a throw or two, like that kind of stuff, fine. And
right,
you, as the senior writer, will be forced to write up something based on a 10-second video of Blake Bortles throwing a ball out in California.
Yeah, I probably won't.
Such is the life of the senior
writer.
But that's about the extent of it. Like, you just don't want your guys getting in any kind of trouble. No freak injuries, anything like that, which happen across the league, somebody's going to get hurt over the course of the next 5 weeks doing something. That's just the way the league works. You hope it hits somebody besides the Jacksonville Jaguars. Blake, talking about that month out in California, we touched on it yesterday after he said what he had to say, but the way I put it was, it's not that he has to, it's that he needs to, and he recognizes it. And I think that's a good thing for Blake at this stage. Again, none of it matters until we get to September and they're playing against Houston and he looks like a different guy than he has looked in recent memory. So none of it matters until then, but he's putting in the work that he needs to try to put himself in the best position to be good when we get to September.
Well, I think what it shows, and as you said, there's going to be a faction of people who hear this and say, I don't care, I don't think he's good, and I don't care, nothing matters until first week of September.
They can't play Houston tomorrow.
And that's all great. But it does show you that, I've said this a couple of times, maybe I said it on this air yesterday, you've got 45 days or so before the first training camp practice. He clearly is looking at his calendar and saying, how can I maximize this time? Which means he probably has been thinking for a while, how do I maximize this time? Which means he spent the whole off season, probably since the end of last season, saying, what do I need to do? How do I maximize the time? It shows you where his head is. His head's in the right place. And you can say, well, it's a contract year, John. He should be in the right place. Sure, he should. But not everybody does. And there have been guys who have needed this sort of off-season work. There have been guys who need this sort of off-season focus who haven't done it. But the fact that he's doing it, the fact that he does get it, it just means he's checking all the boxes. He said it and he said it best yesterday. He wants to exhaust every resource to give this thing his best shot and to give this team the best shot. And right now, that's all you can ask. So good for him. Let's see what it is in July.
Look, when the quarterback speaks, it's big news, especially a guy that's kind of – it's not like he's embattled with anybody on the roster for that spot, but he's embattled for his job.
Well, to put it in perspective, I was standing there. I hadn't yet heard anybody ask him. I hadn't asked him, and Ryan O'Halloran asked him, what are your next 4 or 5 weeks? Are you going back to California? When he said he was, I wasn't surprised, but I wouldn't have been surprised if he said he wasn't. There's no obligation to do this over the next 4 or 5 weeks. So, again, it shows you where his head is, football-oriented, to use that term. All the stuff you wanted to hear, you heard, and that's what you wanted right now. For this offseason, he's checked every box. He went to California during the offseason phase of January, February, March, and April, whenever that was. I think he went in January. February, March, and April. He's done what he was supposed to do. Now let's see what the results are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from Marone's standpoint, I think he's handled it well as far as the Blake stuff where, look, he says, yeah, I mean, he looks better mechanically. We'll see. Sure. That's kind of the answer that we're getting from Marone, which I'm not sure that's exactly the kind of answer we would have gotten, you know, in the past several years about that kind of player. I'm not sure. You know,
sure,
I don't know because they weren't in this exact situation with Blake Bortles until they are right now,
right?
Like, it's not like he was going into his fourth year last year. Going into last season, there was only excitement about what Blake Bortles was going to potentially be. So we don't know exactly what they would say, but I think they are handling it the right way from the perspective of, look, everybody in the situation knows. For those fans that hear us say anything about Blake and go, I don't care until September, guess what? Neither do they.
Right.
It's not that they don't care. It's they know it doesn't really matter until we get to the regular season. Everybody involved in the situation is aware that that's the case.
Right. There has been, I don't know how it's interpreted what we're all writing and saying, but from the team's message source, meaning Coughlin, Marone, even Blake, there has been no pumping up of what Blake's been doing this offseason. There's been no hype machine. All that stuff.
It's what he's supposed to do.
It's just been answering questions about it. And, you know, in the 5 times I've seen him, if he plays mechanically, accuracy-wise, next season, the way he's playing in OTAs and minicamps, the accuracy level, I'm not going to say every pass has been perfect, but he's thrown a lot of good ones. He's hit guys deep. He's hit with touch. He seems to be most of the time pretty accurate, intermediate, short, which there's been times in recent years where he's been bad and on those levels. If he takes what he's doing out onto the field, he can get by with what he's doing physically out on the field right now. What I don't know, and in 3 years what I haven't seen, is consistency at the position, really good level of play on third down, all the stuff we talked about, avoiding the interceptions, all the in-game stuff. I have no way of knowing until September what he's going to do. Again, because this time last year, mechanics weren't even talked about with Blake at his point last year. I mean, they were talked about because they'd been an issue in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody this time last year after the offseason was sitting there going, boy, Blake needs to get his butt to California. I mean, he was fine. If I had been Blake, I wouldn't have been thinking I needed to go to California. He was a young kid. He had improved the previous year. He had looked pretty good in the offseason. There was no sense of urgency on that topic this time last year. It became a factor once it sort of fell apart during the season. Why didn't you go out? But again, that's why I keep a perspective on what we're seeing in the offseason, because with him, the offseason doesn't necessarily tell you what's going to happen in the future.
No, it really doesn't. And the question of the day today asking, if you remove Blake from the equation, because we know.
Sure.
Blake is the answer for the make-or-break player on this Jaguars roster.
He's
but if
one
you,
through ten.
Yeah, but if you look at beyond Blake Bortles and try to pinpoint, and I think it's a good question because I think I've gotten six or seven different answers in the first 10 responses that we've gotten today, but beyond Blake Bortles, who is the next biggest make-or-break player for this Jaguars team in 2017? Not necessarily for themselves, because I think Dante is pretty clearly the answer in that regard, but for the team, who is the biggest make-or-break player for 2017?
I would say for the team and for himself, it's so clearly Fowler, and we've discussed it so much. But I think Miles Jack's pretty big. I mean, it's I think Dante's number two, because I've said over and over again, and you and I have talked about it a lot, on air, off air, important situation pass rush is 1A in terms of importance on this team.
No doubt.
And that's what Fowler should be able to give you, that impact. Fowler should be the guy who's hitting the quarterback as the ball is released and making the ball float in the air for interceptions. And that's how chaos happens on defense. It's what this team needs. It hasn't had. But Miles Jack, make or break, right now there's sort of an assumption that he's going to be good, that his speed and talent is going to be an upgrade at that spot. But they've had solid play that middle linebacker position for a long time, and he needs to be good for this defense to be as good in a lot of situations as it was last year. This defense wasn't a great defense last year, but it was good, really good, except for, I thought, those third downs that you needed to have it, and then they didn't have it. But Miles Jack is a big deal on this defense this year.
And what?
He hasn't done what he's being asked to do yet.
No. And I guess the question then is, look, we can only see so much, we can only tell so much, but based on what you've heard his teammates say, what the coaches have said to this point, how do you feel like that transition for Miles Jack to the middle linebacker spot is going?
I think it's about where they expected it to be, which means it's going to be, he needed reps. Nobody's questioning that he can do the job physically. Nobody's questioning that he can do his job mentally at some point, but it is a long haul to get mentally where Paz was already after 10 years, you know, because Miles has to do it in 3 months. And so there is a, you know, I'll use the phrase nobody wants to hear, a race to maturity, but there's sort of that, but that's really going on with this.
Where no doubt.
Miles has to get to the point where he can get as close as possible to when a teammate looks over and Miles is making the call, that they know instinctively that, yeah, if we do that, that's right. And when you talk to teammates, that's what they had with Paz, is this guy who they knew instinctively, if he was saying it with 3 seconds below the play, with 3 seconds before the play started, they assumed, yeah, let's go do it. That's right. It's going to take some time to get that level with Miles. But that's what he's doing. And you get the idea that he's getting there. But it's always sort of couched with, yeah, we got a long way to go. And at the time these guys are saying this, which has been early June of the first minicamp, you're supposed to have a long way to go.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with, you know, what Telvin had to say, and some of it felt like it was about some kind of level of frustration that he's not looking over and see Puzzlesny. He didn't say that, but you could feel that that was kind of in the background of some of what he had to say, and I don't blame him for it.
Right, I think that's going to be your gut reaction as a player is it's a little bit of a shock not to see that.
Yeah.
But there's also an understanding of there is a positive to having Miles Jack on the field, which is the physical things he can do, the things he brings. So I think there is we got to get through this. We got to get him ready. Let's go do it.
Yeah. Everyone knows how I feel about Miles Jack, have since before they drafted him. He was my guy going into that draft. And I think Miles is going to be a really, really good middle linebacker in this league. I think early on in this season, because you have that direct comparison to what we have seen Paul Puzzlesny do in the last couple of years, there's going to be a time where Miles Jack runs a million miles an hour into the wrong gap.
No question.
Or he's caught flat-footed somewhere, and you're like, well, Puzz would have made that play.
Right.
But you also need to take note of the plays that Miles Jack athletically makes that Paul Puzzlesny just wouldn't be able to make.
Right.
And the team trying to figure out where on this curve they need to be, I go back to the missed opportunity at the end of last season. While Miles Jack wasn't playing some middle linebacker for the last month of last year on third down, it baffles me still. I think they're going to pay for that in the short term.
Probably.
With Miles Jack not having had that opportunity. You talk about he needs reps. Well, there was a clear opportunity to get Miles Jack some reps last year that it just felt like they didn't take advantage of. We'll see if that costs him early on in the season or not, but he's going to be the middle linebacker.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to paint that Paul Puzzlesny was perfect in the middle. I mean, there were certainly cases where
he's a really solid pro.
Athleticism, Miles Jack's speed and athleticism will trump what he perhaps is not caught up on experience-wise. I'm going to say mentally because it's not that. It's just the experience of having done it and having it be instinctive. It's like when you have spoken a language for 10 years compared to 6 months. You're going to be more fluent in the language after 10 years.
Yeah, he's going to erase some things physically that Paul Puzzlesny couldn't while they're trying to catch him up on getting him in that mental headspace that Paul Puzzlesny was at. Which
at
he may never get there mentally.
Like,
we don't know.
Right.
Yeah, we don't know. We know how good a player Paul was up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the physical traits, he was never the most physically gifted middle linebacker, but he played the position very, very well. There were times where he was asked to do something that isn't his strength.
Right.
And he did the best job that he possibly could with it, and it just didn't work. Now they got a guy that physically is a more talented athlete than the guy they had playing that position, and we'll see how long it takes to catch up. The other guy you mentioned there, Dante Fowler, who gets brought up a lot, it's... The interesting thing to me with Dante Fowler is we have to bring him up. And I think that does say something about where Fowler is right now as far as out here in the offseason and the kind of work that he's putting in that, you know, if I ask a teammate, if I ask a coach, you know, who's standing out of practice, Dante's name isn't coming up for a lot of people. It's, well, what about Dante?
Mm-hmm.
And then from at least Marone's perspective, what we seem to get a lot is, look, he's trying to work on his nutrition. He's working on these different things. It's not like Coach Marone is handing out high praise to a bunch of people, but it does feel like I'm not sure even they're seeing from Dante Fowler Jr. right now what they would like to see going from year two to year three as far as him developing the kind of stuff that they would hope he would as an athlete.
Yeah, I think with him, it's I sort of get the idea that there's a little bit of a hesitancy and a resistance to repeating last year's story, which this time last year, everybody was so head over heels with his athleticism.
No doubt.
And the fact that he was just looked like he was going to absolutely, you know, be a meteor across the league. So I think he's still showing that same stuff that you fell in love with last year, but there is a realization that, hey, that's not enough. And sort of much like Blake, nobody's going to believe anything about Fowler right now until he does it with pads on against real live competition, because that's where he sort of hit the wall last year. So that's my impression talking to people about Dante. It's more of, look, it's all about pass rush moves. It's all about showing if these things that he's worked on in the offseason are going to translate once the pads go on.
Yeah, and I get that that's part of what feeds the, you know, you ask, I asked Malik Jackson yesterday about teammates standing out on the defensive line, and he said everybody, but the first name he said was Unique Ngakoue.
Right.
Right, and that's the guy who led the team in sacks last year, came in as a rookie, and the perceived idea of Unique Ngakoue, at least for me, and it comes from his teammates as well, is this guy is working his tail off for everything that he's getting. Like, he earned the opportunity to be the starting defensive end last year. He earned those 8 sacks, and he's going into this his first real offseason with his team, and he's pushing even harder to get even better. For a guy that, you know, when they drafted him, it's like, well, he's kind of just a pass rush guy, and we'll see what he can give us in the run game. He was the every down starter.
And this
he
is a fascinating year for him, because 8 sacks last year, and yet the 8 sacks, you sort of looked at him and went, okay, 8 sacks. And I didn't poo-poo it, but you thought, okay, how much better is he going to get? He's got the technique. He is a really good fundamental player starting out. Is he a guy who can turn into a dominant pass rusher, a 13 or 14 sack guy? And you sort of put that aside and assume maybe not. But if he can do that, then all of a sudden you got to, and this is a big year for that, because if he actually improves on his rookie year in his second year, then you've got something special and something you can count on for a long time.
Yeah, then you're not having to count on Dante Fowler for that pass rush.
Right.
You got it somewhere else. The idea is to find the pass rush. Now, you invest the kind of draft pick you do in Dante Fowler Jr., you don't want to watch him wash out.
Boy, you
on
sure
your
like
roster
both
after 4 years.
Good.
Right. Like, it's okay to have more than one guy do that kind of job. And then the question becomes, what are you getting from the other side? And how different does it look for this Jaguars defense with Malik Jackson already having given you what he did? And I've been so impressed with Malik. I was impressed with him before they signed him, watching that run through the playoffs to the Super Bowl with Denver. And he got here, and he hasn't for a single moment felt like a guy who felt like, okay, now I got paid, let's sit back. It has been, since the moment he got here and he said, look, I want to go earn that $90 million, it's felt like he's been out there trying to earn the $90.
He is one of the most fascinating players to me for exactly that reason. And people who listen or read me know I don't put a whole lot of hope that free agents are going to come in immediately and be what people expect him to be. And I've actually, I mean, it's been strange. I've gotten emails this offseason talking about Malik somehow not living up to expectations, being a disappointment. And it just doesn't register. It's one of the most confusing takes to me, because to me, he was so good last year on so many levels. And I get that he didn't have 15 saves. He's not going to be that guy. But everything you want in an unrestricted free agent, coming in, buying in, the ability to be a leader quickly, the ability to play at a high level, available the whole time, seems to still be sort of accelerating in terms of his leadership in the locker room. I think he is a home run free agent. Probably the best free agent they've had since I've been here, since Paul Posluszny. You know, a guy who you could see being here in 4 or 5 years, where most free agents, you have a hard time seeing him being here past 3.
Yeah. And we'll see what it looks like. Again, I'm curious to see. They haven't had a whole lot of pass rush at that big end spot. And Calais Campbell gives you that run-stopping ability. I mean, he's a monster of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And also gives you some pass rush. And we don't know what it looks like.
He needs to disrupt.
Yeah, we don't know what it looks like for them to have that at that spot, because they really didn't have it with Odrick or Olawale.
Yeah, you had it a couple of times early with Odrick. The Miami sack in that second game he had. But it was never really that thing you could count on. And, to me, that's the whole key. Calais Campbell needs to be the best free agent signing, because you need disruption on the defensive front.
No doubt. And something to count on from a pass rush perspective would be, as you said, 1A for the Jacksonville Jaguars
with him,
right after Blake.
Disruption isn't necessarily off the edge. It can be interior. It can be getting a hand up. We had him on .com Live yesterday, and he talked about it's just figuring out a way to get there and to matter when it's third down and there's a big play to be had. And I'm paraphrasing, he didn't say exactly that, but it's figuring out a way when he doesn't make a play in that situation, he wants to figure out why, because he feels like he should, and boy, does this team need that.
All right, Johnny O, head on out to mini camp practice.
I can't wait. I'm going to sweat a little bit.
It's about that time. Yeah, enjoy.
All right.
The sun is still shining on the First Coast, at least for now. We'll see if it still is by the time you guys get done.
All right.
There he goes, John Osher, the Jaguars.com senior writer. What do you have coming up this week, by the way?
Hopefully nothing. No, we'll be covering Doug Marone will talk after practice today.
And all the assistants.
And that kind of wraps it up. And then I'll do something off the coordinators talking next week, sort of trying to sum everything up. And then and you may not see Johnny O on the site for a while. You see the Ozone. But I'll low-key it for a couple weeks and try to get recharged for July.
Heck yeah, man. It's that time of year.
All right, buddy. We'll see you soon.
See you soon. There he goes, John Osher. Kind enough to join us here for the first hour or so of the program. When we get back, we'll get back into some Jaguars talk. I got something from Gil Brandt that I want to get into as well that I saw on Twitter yesterday as he was ranking his top receivers of all time. We'll take a look at that as we continue along. It is a Thursday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Wait, what's the song on right now? We're not gonna take it. It's kind of like I'm not going to take your stuff.
Let the rain come down. Let the rain come down. How I wonder, who I wonder, who stops the rain.
Good stuff there from Jaguars running back coach Tyrone Wheatley. As, you know, it's like we need to have a singing competition between Wheatley and head coach Doug Marone. I will say this, to criticize the technique there from Tyrone. All right, if you're going to do it, brother. Belt it out. You know, don't be afraid of it. Like, it's part of the joy of listening to Marone do what he's doing during that clip that we play so much. But it's that Marone has no shame. He's just going for it on every single note. So, come on, Tyrone, let it go. It's almost like he was whisper singing. Didn't it sound like that to you too, Tyler?
We're not going to take it.
See, it's like he's not willing to really go into it.
I'm not going
to
take your stuff.
Let the rain come down. Let the rain come down. How I wonder, who I wonder, who stops the rain.
It's like he knows he's not that great a singer, so he doesn't want everybody to hear it. Didn't it feel that way to you too, Tyler?
It kind of did. I guess it must be a requirement that if you're mic'd up as a coach for a Jags practice on the .com, you got to be caught singing in the pregame warm-up in the stretch.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Like, I know anytime I'm out at practice, you know, and they're playing that music, if it's a song I know, look, you can't help it. At some point, you're going to be singing along to something if you know it well enough to sing along to it. So I can, it's not even like you're thinking about that song. It's just there. And so you start going along with the rhythm. That's just kind of something that happens on occasion. Now, I'm sure Tyrone Wheatley, although I do not know for sure, but I doubt Tyrone Wheatley has the Othello in the back pocket to go along with everything else that Doug Marone doing the singing. He said when he doesn't do karaoke, he told us earlier this week. But
touch me not so near, yet I persuade myself to speak the truth. I'd rather this tongue cut from my throat then do offense to Michael Cassio.
There he is, quoting Othello. Again, it catches me off guard every time. I just didn't expect that from the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach, even though I know he's a renaissance man, and didn't realize just how much of one until he joined us in studio earlier this week. So if I have to critique Tyrone Wheatley at all, it would be just belt it out, brother.
He seemed like a fun guy to play for Tyrone Wheatley, especially Doug Marone, too, as well. But Tyrone Wheatley in the Jags.com clip, he was badgering the LSU running back, Leonard Fournette, and he was saying, come on, LSU, I know you went to class sometimes. Let's go. Let's go.
That's good stuff. Hopefully, at some point, we'll have the chance to sit down and talk to Tyrone Wheatley. I know, again, when practice gets done today, these guys, boom, they're gone, boy. I mean, I know Malik Jackson has his event coming up tonight, and some of the players are going to hang out with him over there. But once he gets done with that, I guarantee those guys are out of town for the most part.
Malik told the guys in the sports den, Denny and James, that he has a 5 a.m. flight Friday morning.
Yeah, I mean, they're out of town. And look, if you were doing what they're doing, you would be too. It's you only get the 5 weeks or whatever after this month before you get into training camp mode. And once we get to training camp and then into the regular season, there's not a whole lot of time to do what you want to do if you're a football player. And it doesn't mean that they're not going to stay in shape. It's just, look, you make that kind of money, you want to spend it at some point. And I would be spending it on vacation in July as well. That's how I would be doing this thing as well if I were one of these guys. I mentioned the Gil Brandt tweet that I saw yesterday. I'm going to hold off on getting into that because it deserves more than just a couple of minutes. So we'll get into that on the other side. We have this state in football history, as well as the Honda Drive around the NFL. If you're wondering what's going on at the U.S. Open, a quick update for you. Let's get into the Scobie update. Brian Harman, Ricky Fowler, your leaders at 3 under par. Both of them started on their back nines today. Ricky is 3 under through 6 holes. Brian Harman with a birdie at his 7th hole of the day, the 16th hole. Out there at the U.S. Open, he is tied for the lead at 3 under par. A group of golfers at 2 under, including, let's see here, Taylor Gooch, Wee Kim, Charlie Hoffman at 2 under par, as well as Thomas Aiken and Tommy Fleetwood, all at 2 under par, just 1 stroke off the lead. Jordan Spieth on the golf course, he is 1 under through 3 holes today. Dustin Johnson is even through 3, playing alongside Jordan Spieth. As far as some of the other big names, still yet to tee off, Bubba Watson, Adam Scott, Sergio Garcia all playing together. They'll go off at 1:30 this afternoon. Jason Day, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy also all paired up together. They'll be going off a little bit after 2 o'clock. So we'll have your updates hourly here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM throughout the afternoon, but wanted to give you a quick update on what's going on out there. Is Ricky Fowler, at least out with the early lead, tied with Brian Harman at 3 under during the first round of the U.S. Open. This state in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL, as well as getting into what Gil Brandt had to say about his top 10 wide receivers of all time when we return. It is a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, as it's been a newsy week in regards to one of the biggest legal cases in American history, the unfortunate murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. The trial of O.J. Simpson, and it was on this, it was on this date in 1995 where an event happened that eventually led to Johnny Cochran saying one of the most famous lines in legal history.
Maybe I can demonstrate this graphically. Let me show you something. This is a knit cap. I'm going to put this knit cap on. And you've been seeing me for a year. If I put this knit cap on, who am I? I'm still Johnny Cochran with a knit cap. And if you look at O.J. Simpson over there, and he has a rather large head, O.J. Simpson in a knit cap from 2 blocks away is still O.J. Simpson. It's no disguise. It's no disguise. It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
In the most public legal blunder maybe in history, today is the date in 1995 that O.J. Simpson was allowed to try on a pair of gloves in court while wearing latex gloves, possibly choosing not to take his arthritis medicine to make his hands swell. The gloves might have shrunk due to the blood that was on them after the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, and thanks in part to that moment of brilliance, that was just another in a long line of head-scratching moments from the prosecution and the bench. And the investigation in that particular trial, officially the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, are still an open investigation in Los Angeles. Happy 52nd birthday to Kerwin Bell. Bell played his collegiate football with the Florida Gators before playing 14 years of professional football, bouncing between the NFL World League of American Football and the Canadian Football League. Bell was hired as the head coach of JU in 2007, coached there until 2015. He is currently the head coach at Valdosta State University. Happy 24th birthday to Miami Dolphins running back Jay Ajayi. Ajayi rushed for 200 yards in 3 games last season, including back-to-back 200-yard efforts against Pittsburgh and Buffalo. His third 200-yard game came against, well, the Buffalo Bills in their rematch later in the year. Ajayi was a fifth-round pick of the Finns in 2005. Happy 34th birthday to Carolina Panthers backup quarterback Derek Anderson, who after joking around on the sideline with a teammate of his gave us this media gold. I think, what year was this? 2009?
This was back in 2010.
We got this audio from Derek Anderson following an Arizona Cardinals loss.
What Deuce and I talk about is nobody else's business.
But why was something funny when you're down 18 points in the fourth quarter?
It wasn't funny. I wasn't laughing about anything.
The camera showed you.
Okay, that's fine.
Comment about it.
That's fine. I'm not laughing about it. You think this is funny? I take this serious.
I'm not.
Real serious. I put my heart and soul into this every single week.
All I'm saying is the camera shows.
I'm just telling you right now what I do every single week. Every single week. I put my freaking heart and soul into this. I study my off. I don't go out there and laugh.
It's not funny. It's not, nothing's funny to me. I don't want to go out there and get embarrassed on Monday Night Football in front of everybody.
That's why I'm asking you what.
I'm telling you right now. So we're not. We're talking. Deuce and I are talking.
What was the context?
I'm done.
Sorry.
I'm not dealing with him. Sorry.
The PR guy is probably panicking, trying to figure out when he needs to step in and end this insanity, as the line of questioning obviously was not going to change. If you don't remember the story, the Arizona Cardinals were getting beat pretty badly on Monday Night Football, and the camera showed on the sideline during the fourth quarter while they were down basically three touchdowns, him joking around with a teammate. The media, of course, asked him about it afterwards. He started out all right. You could tell he was upset, and it turned into that little tirade.
Is that a fair question? Is that a fair question to ask him? Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, the fans want to know. So in that regard, I guess it's fair. I don't know that you need to hammer it home over and over and over again. But once you start getting that kind of reaction, odds are whatever reporter asks, it's probably going to keep chewing at that bone.
Right, because remember last season in San Diego when the Jags were getting killed by Phillip Rivers and the Chargers, it was late in the game and a camera caught Dan Scuda smiling and laughing and joking around the sideline, and Jags Twitter wasn't too happy about that because they're getting beat by 30 and he's laughing here on the sideline in game two.
That's kind of how it works, right? I mean, those kind of stories seem to develop every year in the league somewhere where, you know, a player is caught laughing on the sideline or they're willing to go shake hands and smile with the other team that just beat them by 30 after a game. It bothers fans a lot more than it bothers players in those circumstances. Derek Anderson trying to let you know that he takes this stuff seriously. They all take this stuff seriously. So happy 34th birthday to Carolina Panthers backup quarterback Derek Anderson, who is still a better football player than Colin Kaepernick, according to SI's Andy Benoit. And that story he wrote last week talking about the 15 backup quarterbacks in the NFL that are better than Cap, who remains unsigned. And finally, in the most Jaguar-related news here on this state in football history, happy 41st birthday to the first, but certainly not the best, running back selected in the 1998 NFL Draft. The Chicago Bears selected Penn State running back Curtis Enos, fifth overall in that draft. Four picks before the Jacksonville Jaguars got Fred Taylor out of the University of Florida in that same draft. Enos played just 3 years, never rushed for more than 916 yards in a season. Freddie T played 13 years in the National Football League, 11 of them here with your Jacksonville Jaguars, seven 1,000-yard seasons, including 1,223 yards and 14 touchdowns in his rookie year after getting just seven carries for 46 yards in the first 2 weeks of the season. That's right. You heard me correctly there. He went for 1,223 and 14 touchdowns and only touched the ball seven times for 46 yards in the first 2 weeks of the season. Fred came into the league on fire. He was an unbelievable player. I remember when they were inducting him into the Pride a couple years ago, going back and watching some of the highlight films of Fred Taylor. It is unbelievable what he was able to do in a Jaguars uniform. So do yourself a favor. Check it out. Go check out some of those Fred Taylor highlights. Remember the good old days from back that 98, 99, 2000 run. And Fred, obviously, a really good player here for a decade with the Jacksonville Jaguars. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Lions traded for former 2014 number 2 overall draft pick and Rams offensive lineman Greg Robinson. The Rams get back a six-rounder in next year's draft. The Lions did also add a second offensive tackle earlier this morning by signing former Bills offensive tackle Cyrus Kwanjo. Tony, you point out that Taylor Decker may have a bad injury, and so that kind of shows the seriousness of where the Lions see that, because they made that trade for Greg Robinson, as well as signing a second tackle this morning. Albert Breer points out the Rams wound up getting eight players out of that 2013 RG3 trade. With Greg Robinson gone, only two remain in Los Angeles: defensive lineman Michael Brockers and linebacker Alec Ogletree. And this is also a funny Greg Robinson note. Jason Cole tweeted this out this morning. Rams coaches swear the talent that Robinson had was Orlando Pace-type talent, but maybe a more damning story about the ex-Ram and new line offensive tackle Greg Robinson is that he spent more time learning rap lyrics than studying pass protections. That according to Jason Cole.
Oh, ooh, no.
So not good. One more story here, Tony. Peyton Manning played a round of golf with President Trump a couple weeks ago, and according to Mike Jones and David Fahrenthold of the Washington Post, Washington quarterback Kirk Cousins played a round of golf with President Trump on Saturday at his new club in New Jersey. Cousins did a good job of not towing the party lines and saying to the media, quote, "It was a great experience. I did not think it would ever happen. had a good enough time that if there's any other former presidents in the D.C. area that want to play, give me a call. I'd love to meet one of them at the courses around here. I know a lot of those former presidents are members at the courses in D.C., and I'm not. So I'd love to get on and get to meet them, Republican, Democrat, left or right. I'd love an invite.
All right. So there we go. That is the Honda Drive around the NFL. The fan feedback question of the day today, asking you, Jaguars fans, outside of Blake Bortles, because we all know that he's the key piece, but outside of Blake Bortles, who is the next biggest make-or-break player for the 2017 season in your eyes for these Jacksonville Jaguars? You can respond on Twitter at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, also on the Facebook page, Jaguars Today on Facebook. We'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on here in about 20 minutes or so. We'll get to some of that. But before we get to that, we're going to let you hear from Blake Bortles here in about 10 minutes. Do want to get into this Gil Brandt tweet yesterday. I cannot get enough of this kind of stuff. Gil Brandt with Randy Moss being announced as he's going to be inducted into the Minnesota Vikings Ring of Honor, which obviously is well-deserved. Randy Moss, I mean, I mentioned how good a start Fred Taylor got off to in his career when he got into the league. It took, let's see, let me count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It took 7 seasons before Randy Moss didn't have 1,000 yards receiving when he got into the league. And that's only because he only got to play 13 games in 2004. His rookie year, 69 catches, 1,313 yards, 17 touchdowns for Randy Moss, his first year in the National Football League. He did a lot of his damage in a Minnesota uniform. Do you remember, Tyler? I know you know Randy Moss was a member of the New England Patriots, but do you remember how many seasons Randy Moss actually played with the Pats?
I think only 2, right?
He played 3.
3?
He wow. played 3, and I think a lot of people would probably say 2.
He had one Randy damn Moss, good year, right?
He had 3 damn good years, is the bottom line with Randy Moss. When he went to New England, the first year he went to New England to play with Tom Brady, 98 catches, 1,493 yards, 23 touchdowns. That set the single-season record for a wide receiver that year. That was when Tom Brady had that big year, too. A couple of years later, Peyton Manning came back and reset all the records that Tom Brady had set, breaking Peyton Manning's previous records. They just went back and forth playing pinball with him there for a couple of years. But 1,493 yards, 23 touchdowns. The next season, Randy only caught 69 passes for 1,008 yards and 11 touchdowns in a Patriots uniform. And his final year in New England, 83 catches, 1,264 yards, and 13 touchdowns. And some people think that middle year is underwhelming. He only caught 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns that season, so it's a little bit disappointing from Randy Moss. That's how good a player he was. But Randy being inducted into the Vikings Ring of Honor, and with that going on, Gil Brandt, who obviously has been covering the league for a long time, works with NFL Network now, he released his list of the top 10 wide receivers all time because he had Randy Moss on that list. Randy Moss, he had at number 3. Number 1, we all know who number 1 is. I don't even have to pop quiz you on this, Tyler. It's Jerry Rice. Everyone knows who number 1 is all time in the history of the league. It's beyond that that it gets a little interesting. Number 2, he had Don Hutson. Number 3, Randy Moss. Number 4, Terrell Owens, who can't get into the Hall of Fame right now because he wasn't a nice guy to the media. Number 5, Marvin Harrison. Number 6, Bullet Bob Hayes, so a little Jacksonville flavor here on the list. Number 7, Larry Fitzgerald. Number 8, Megatron, so Calvin Johnson getting some love. Number 9, Chris Carter. Number 10, Raymond Berry. I wouldn't have Chris Carter that high on the list. But the reason I love these kind of lists, right, is whenever this kind of thing comes out, I just click it, and I love watching the reaction of people to this kind of stuff. And you know, the first response is, yet Owens isn't in the Hall. Ridiculous. That's kind of reasonable to respond to it. The next one is Steve Largent with a question mark. Then we got Tim Brown, never played with great quarterbacks yet, put up great numbers. Just saying, Bob Hayes, number 6, he should be number 2. You think he's the second best receiver in the history of the league? That's a little bit crazy. The one that really gets me, though, is the, where is Michael Irvin? Right. What kind of numbers do you think Michael Irvin put up in his career, Tyler?
What kind of numbers?
Yeah.
Oh, it'd be a pure guess. Without knowing Gil Brandt's list before this segment, I would have put him in the top 10. I don't know how. I obviously didn't see a whole lot of Michael Irvin. I'm a young cat. But I would throw him in the top 10. I'm surprised he's not on that list.
How many double-digit touchdown seasons do you think Michael Irvin had?
Let's say 10.
Playing with that Dallas offense. Now, obviously, Emmitt Smith was prominently used in that offense, too. But how many double-digit touchdown seasons do you think he had?
Double-digit seasons, I'm going to say 8 or 10. That'd be a lot, but only one?
He had one.
Wow.
Michael Irvin had one double-digit touchdown season. I remember I had this argument with, I can't remember who, it may have been Hacker, honestly. But we were discussing where, this was 4 or 5 years ago, talking about Calvin Johnson. And where he stands in kind of the pantheon of receivers in NFL history and what his place was going to be. And he was already on his way to the Hall of Fame. This was before he had the season where he had like 1,900 yards and set the single season record for receptions and yardage in a year. So it had to be 2011 when we were having this discussion. And I thought that Calvin Johnson was already better than Michael Irvin. And I can remember going back and looking at Irvin's numbers. Irvin was a guy who... Look, very physical, obviously a big part of what Dallas was able to do, but the numbers aren't quite there for him. And I'm not saying numbers are everything. I'm saying when you're looking at the top 10 of all time, I certainly think Calvin Johnson deserves to be on that list ahead of him. I think Steve Largent, who some people brought up, deserves to be on that list ahead of him. I'd probably put Torrey Holt ahead of Michael Irvin when everything is said and done, but... You know, Dallas is the big boy on the block from a national perspective. So a lot of fans were reacting to Gil asking, where is Michael Irvin? Michael Irvin is a very good player, a Hall of Famer, obviously won multiple Super Bowl rings. He was a great player for the Dallas Cowboys. That doesn't mean he's one of the 10 best wide receivers to ever play the game. And again, I think if you go back and you really dissect the numbers, you can see that kind of thing. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are screaming at me right now. You can continue to on the text line, 904-641-1010. We'll get into some of your reaction to the question of the day. But first, want to hear what Blake Bortles had to say after minicamp practice yesterday. We'll let you hear some of what Blake Bortles said following practice as we return. It is a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today right here on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Oh, I love that some of you guys are nothing if not predictable. I love. We're going to get to Blake Bortles here in just a moment and some of the comments he had after the minicamp practice yesterday. But on the text line from the 576, after hearing what I had to say about Michael Irvin, yeah... screw Michael Irvin. What did he ever do? Just because you were one of the best wide receivers to ever touch the field, put on a clinic every weekend, and won Super Bowls doesn't mean you're special. Big deal. You're a Hall of Famer, a household name, and unanimously respected by all of your peers as one of the best to play the position. What really matters is the stats some guy on 1010XL found on Wikipedia. Well, I didn't find him on Wikipedia, one. I found him on Pro Football Reference, which would be the official stats page for it. And if you want to go even deeper in it, Michael Irvin was elected as one of the best handful of wide receivers in the league, being the All-Pro team, which is more important, more prestigious than Pro Bowls. It just is. Michael Irvin was elected to one All-Pro team. Look, I'm not saying that Michael Irvin wasn't a great player. I'm not saying that he wasn't one of the best wide receivers of the 90s. He was. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve the Hall of Fame. He was clearly part of one of the biggest dynasties in sports during that time. I'm not saying anything to knock him down. Some of the way that you people perceive some of the things that are said, I don't believe Michael Irvin is one of the 10 best wide receivers to ever play the game. Somehow that's me hating on the guy, that I think there are other guys that are more deserving of being on that list. You guys crack me up sometimes. I swear. One All-Pro team. He's got one double-digit touchdown season and one All-Pro team. I don't think that spells top 10 receiver of all time. I just don't. I don't think he was anywhere near as good as Randy Moss.
Under the similar players category on that same website, profootballreference.com, Tony, under career, Lance Allworth, Rod Smith, Jimmy Smith, Torrey Holt,
Jimmy's
Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Roddy White, Chad Johnson.
Yeah, look, those are all, look, that's a bunch of guys that are going to wind up in the Hall of Fame. Lance Allworth is already in there. Torrey Holt could eventually get in there. We'll see about Jimmy. I'm certainly pulling for him. Randy Moss is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Chris Johnson, it never going to get there in all likelihood, but Paul Warfield, Marvin Harrison. Look, he's a great player. That doesn't mean he's top 10 of all time, and saying that I don't think he's top 10 of all time is not a knock on Michael Irvin or what I thought he was. I think he was a great player. Who also got away with more shoving off than any receiver in the 90s. But we'll move on. Let's get into Blake Bortles and what Blake had to say yesterday as he was speaking after Wednesday's minicamp practice. And, you know, we've talked a lot about what's going on with Blake this offseason. He opened it up yesterday talking about his goal being is just to be better this season.
My goal is for us and this team and this organization to be extremely successful, and we have it for 3 years since I've been here. You know, even after that happens, you know, I don't think anything will change. You know, this is kind of, it's what I do. This is our job. This is my job and my passion. So I'm going to do and exhaust every, you know, resource I have and able to try and make this thing work and start, you know, get it rolling.
Blake Bortles also talked of it. This is kind of the pull quote coming out of yesterday for everybody that was there. Bortles says that guys are sick and tired of just being below average.
We have Coach Coughlin here. We have Doug Marrone here. We have Nathaniel Hackett, who, you know, we all as an offense are extremely comfortable and confident with. And it just feels as though guys are, you know, sick and tired of being below average and not being successful, when we feel as though we have the ability to be a good team. And, you know, we haven't been. It's time to make a change. It's not going to happen overnight. You got to go do something about it.
Obviously, a lot of expectations for this football team going into last season. They didn't live up to a single one of them when everything is said and done. You can talk about the improvement on defense, and maybe that's a little bit of a tiny baby feather in your cap as a Jaguars fan, but in the end, you won three football games. That's the way it worked out. And I think a lot of the guys that are in that locker room, including the new faces and guys like Calais Campbell, you add that kind of player, you add somebody like Barry Church, a bunch of the other names, A.J. Boye, you potentially add to Jalen Ramsey as maybe the best cornerback tandem in the league. We'll see how it plays out when they actually get onto the football field. But you can understand where the guys in that locker room that know, you know, what it looks like when teams are pretty good, the ones that do know that, have to be walking in that locker room saying, we got a lot more pieces than three wins. It's just, it's got to be frustrating for them, and you kind of felt that spilling over a little bit there yesterday with what Blake had to say. One of the other things, and we've all talked about it, the team saying they want to limit how much Blake Bortles is going to be throwing the ball. Bortles was asked if he believes throwing less in football games will help him.
You'd like to think that if you throw the ball less, you commit less turnovers, you have a higher completion percentage, all that, and I think that's all stuff that kind of comes along with it, but you obviously still, you know, from a quarterback perspective, have to still continue to, you know, make decisions and deliver the ball where it needs to be.
Bortles has been, was also asked, just with OTAs being in the rearview window, he only had one more day out there at minicamp today, but pretty much being done with the offseason, how he believes OTAs have gone.
I think it's been good. You know, there's still a bunch of little mistakes we're making that we got to get fixed. You know, I think it's going to be a lot on guys this next month coming up and what they do with their time by themselves, how much time they put in, how much work they do, and how much better they try to get. Because, you know, when we show up back at the end of July, it's, you know, it's time to get rolling, and we can't necessarily make the mistakes that, you know, have been happening over the past couple of weeks.
It is crazy. Like, and I think about it every year once we get into the season, but the tempo of this time of year compared to where it is when we get to basically the end of July is insane. I mean, there's just no time to do anything. And in a league where you have so little time to work with these players, you can understand why a lot of the development is up to the player. Like, it's about him keeping himself in shape. It's about Blake being willing to go to California during the month that he has off here for the next 5 weeks and continue to work. It's about those kind of things, because the coaches quite simply can't get enough time on the field with these guys anymore to make that kind of impact. It is on the player to be a professional and come in and be ready to go once we get ready for training camp. Blake Bortles was asked about what is the toughest part of OTAs.
I think the thing that, you know, you kind of struggle with is how do you simulate it to a game? You know, I thought Doug made a good point yesterday, you know, took a cool zone break or whatever towards the middle of practice, and, you know, let's treat this coming up period like coming out of halftime. You know, let's try and make these as realistic as possible, even though we get, you know, it's a third down period or it's a run play action period. I'm kind of taking each play within its own entity and making it its own thing and trying to make it as relatable as possible to playing a game.
Yeah, he talked about situational football, Doug Marrone did, and trying to get more of that kind of work done. That's another way to incorporate that into the practices. Bortles talked about the trip to California. He's going to be going out there for the next month to work on those mechanics and how that may compare to the previous trips he's had.
I think it'll definitely be more specific. You know, kind of in the or off-season one or whatever you want to call it, February, March, April. It was, you know, mechanic-based, let's fix this, let's make sure this is sustainable and can, you know, remain consistent. To whereas now I think, you know, I'll go out there with some some more descriptive things. You know, here's what I felt like I struggled with footwork-wise and throwing this route. You know, here's what I'd like to get better at. Here's something that was new. You know, I'd like to just rep it. So I think it'll definitely be a little more kind of dialed in.
Let's hope so. Again, he's putting in the work. We'll see how it looks when everything comes back together in July, as we'll be looking forward to seeing what it's going to look like for whatever limited time he gets in preseason games. And then obviously none of that really matters until we get to Houston and week one of the regular season. Everyone knows that. Bortles was asked about, with the news coming in the last couple of weeks, Brandon Linder getting moved around a little bit. They're trying some different guys at different spots, including the center spot, with Brandon Linder not getting all those snaps. Bortles was asked about working with multiple centers and if that affects him.
No, it's been good, because I've had a chance to play with really all three guys that I've been working with. You know, obviously played with Brandon for most of last year, got Luke at the end of it, and then Luke, rookie year, we were together the whole time, got Shatley a little bit during the season. So it's three guys that I'm already pretty familiar with, so they've been good. You know, they've all been pretty good. They're trying to figure out, what our best group of five is, and we're still working that out.
Then getting into some of the nuts and bolts of the offense, Blake was asked about the improvement in the running game.
Definitely. I think that's definitely showed up, watching tape us. I think it's not to make excuses or anything, but it's difficult with no pads on up front for those guys to block and do different things. But I think for what we've been able to do, I think the running game's looked really good. I think they've done a good job up front. I think the backs have done a really good job. And it's been a good group effort. I think receivers have done well helping out, getting in there when they need to and block some guys. So I'm excited for that.
Hopeful to talk to the new quarterbacks coach, Scott Milanovic, when we get into training camp. These guys not going to be around coaches either, really, for the next 5 weeks, at least not as far as being available to us here in the media. But Bortles talked about his new quarterback coach, Scott Milanovic.
Having a guy that you can talk to that stands back there, because there's not a whole lot of guys that have played it and actually seen it from your perspective. So to be able to have a guy that's seen it from standing in the pocket, and he can relate to a lot of things that guys that haven't played can't really relate to, is awesome. You know, he kind of sees it the same way we see it and understands, you know, kind of what the thought process is, what's going on. So he's been awesome to have around.
Yeah. I mean, look, we had Doug Marrone in earlier this week, and before he came on with us, if you go back and watch what he said after practice, he was asked about, he got some like questionnaire from the league that he was filling out, and it was asking, you know, who do you think would be a good like prospect to be the next head coach in the league, like that kind of thing. And Doug just wrote, pretty much any backup quarterback in league history. It's just, they have to be so locked in to not only their own job, but obviously, if you're the quarterback, then you know what everybody's doing all the time. And you can see how having somebody that has experience playing that position would help when it comes to coaching the quarterbacks as well. We'll see what kind of dividends that pays for Blake Bortles, who also commented on his wide receivers yesterday after practice.
Yeah, I think they've been awesome. Really, that whole group, from A-Rob and Marquise to Hearns, I think they've done a really good job, to Rashad Green as well. Keenan, I think, has done a really good job with him. I think, they're obviously a lot more clear now with our system and the way Nathaniel kind of goes over things. And I think they've ran more in these OTAs than they might have run in the 3 years we've been here. So I think it's good for them, and I'm excited to see what those guys can do.
One last question here from Blake Bortles. Blake was asked if during the month off, we know he's going out to California, but if he will, quote, get away.
My goal is for us and this team and this organization to be extremely successful, and we have it for 3 years since I've been here. So I think, even after that happens, I don't think anything will change. This is kind of, it's what I do. This is our job. This is my job and my passion. So I'm going to do and exhaust every, resource I have and able to try and make this thing work and start, get it rolling.
All right, there it is, the comments of Blake Bortles following minicamp yesterday. We won't hear from him again until training camp, so we may be getting updates periodically from whatever's going on out in California from time to time, but that's the last you're going to hear from the starting quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars for a while, and hopefully when he comes back in training camp, and there's going to be a lot of that open up to the public, so it'll be your first opportunity, fans, to set eyes on the new and improved Blake Bortles and make your own judgment about how new and improved he actually is. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment on the other side, asking you today, outside of Blake, so remove Blake from the equation, who is the next biggest make or break player for this 2017 Jacksonville Jaguars team. We'll get to some of your responses as well as go through the list on NFL.com of the 10 guys across the league, according to Adam Schein, that kind of fit that category, which does include Blake Bortles, as we continue along here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I walked into Tire Outlet's warehouse, and what did I see? Well, what do you think I saw? I saw tires, but the sheer amount of makes and models absolutely blows you away. Over 300,000 tires in the local inventory alone here for Tire Outlet. You log on to TireOutlet.com, you're going to find any make or model that you want, with a warehouse about 200,000 square feet stocked floor to ceiling. Wholesale pricing, premium service. It's a great combination. It's what Tire Outlet provides you. Whatever kind of tire you want, that's where you're going to find it. At the best price, TireOutlet.com.
2 hours spent on two things.
Ow.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
What, are we doing 90s dance tracks? What is going on, Tyler?
I just kind of dragged in some Black Box, some old school 90s jock jam, right?
Oh my goodness. The 90s dance. I turn this on every now and then just to annoy my friends when they're at the house. It gets a groan pretty quick. The 90s dance does.
Throwing some tag team.
I'm not going to lie, I kind of enjoy it. It doesn't bother me at all. It's super cheesy. Like, you can tell when it was made. Like, you don't have to be a genius to know this was made in the 90s. That's just what it sounds like. As we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment, but kind of the inspiration for today's fan feedback spotlight question, an article from Adam Schein on NFL.com that he put out yesterday afternoon that had the 9 players in the league with the biggest make or break seasons. How did he word this exactly? He said make or break seasons for these players in regards to how their team is going to do, which, look, honestly, if you're going to make this list, it's just going to be 9 quarterbacks. But he tried to go a little bit deeper than that. And if you look at the, let's start at the bottom of it. Number 9, the new left tackle for the Seattle Seahawks, former Jacksonville Jaguar Luke Jokel, number 9 on the list. Obviously, Seattle's had a bunch of problems when it comes to the offensive line. They think they're starting to get it fixed by bringing in a guy like Jokel. We'll see. Number 8 on his list, Sammy Watkins, who just hasn't been able to stay healthy for Buffalo. They declined the fifth-year option, so this could be his last season up there after they traded up for Sammy Watkins in the 2014 draft. So we'll see how that works out for him this year. Sheldon Richardson, the defensive lineman for the New York Jets, he's an interesting piece because no one knows if he's going to get moved around, what his long-term future is with the New York Jets. He's had the off-field issues, and he's on a just terrible football team with the New York Jets. Matt Forte, I saw a quote from him yesterday following a practice saying, "We are not tanking the season." Well, I know you're not, Matt. I'm not worried about you. I'm not worried about the players tanking the season. Take a look at your roster again and tell me you're not tanking the season. Number 6, Eric Ebron, tight end for the Detroit Lions. Again, a first-round pick. A lot expected of him, but haven't seen enough out of him yet, and he's had struggles staying healthy. Number 5, Eric Flowers, the left tackle for the Giants. He was kind of a project player when they took him. Top 10, what was he, 9th overall, something like that, in the 2015 NFL draft. Hasn't lived up to that as the Giants continue to look for some offensive line help. Number 4 on this list, according to Adam Schein, Dom Capers, the defensive coordinator in Green Bay. We've seen the Green Bay offense has been good enough for almost a decade now with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, but the defense continues to be an issue. Can they get it put together up there? Chuck Pagano, at number 3, the head coach in Indianapolis. He's dealing with a shoulder injury to his starting quarterback. There's always a will they, won't they. It feels like with Chuck Pagano right now up there in Indianapolis, so we'll see how that plays out. Number 2, your quarterback, Blake Bortles. Look, I don't know how successful or not the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be in 2017, but in the end, it does come down to Blake Bortles. Mike Lennon, number 1 on this list, the free agent acquisition of Chicago. Obviously, Mitch Trubisky, they drafted at number 2 overall, so his job is on the line. But when we talk about Blake and this idea, I think that a lot of fans have bought into, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't buy into the idea of being a team that's going to try to control the game, run the ball. That's why you draft Fournette. That's why you bring in Albert. It's why you draft Cam Robinson. It's obviously been the plan offensively this offseason to go try to get that run game really going to take some of the pressure off Blake Bortles. this is still a quarterback's league. And what I mean by that is, at some point, if we're talking about a bunch of these, you know, one-score games in the fourth quarter, in a bunch of those, Blake Bortles is going to have to make the play that wins or loses it. He's going to. That's this league. That's the way it works. There's really no getting around it. He's the guy who touches the ball on every play. So you can talk about the plan being, look, we're going to take the pressure off him and try to get the run game going. That's a fine plan, understanding that no matter how much you buy into that being the plan, at some point, Blake Bortles has to be the man. And he has to be the guy that's going to show something that he hasn't shown to this point in his career, which is that killer instinct in the fourth quarter. It's just not something we've seen from Blake yet. Maybe it's something that we see in 2017. I hope we do. And I know a lot of people feel like I'm negative about Blake. I'm not trying to be negative about Blake. I'm trying to be honest about the way I feel about the player, which is I am very apprehensive about Blake Bortles being the future of the quarterback position in Jacksonville. I hope he proves me wrong. I would love to be wrong. There's all the time I have predictions about stuff. When I predict the Jaguars to lose, you know, on a week-to-week basis, depending when we're doing our picks here on the show, it's not because I want them to lose. I want to be wrong about those kind of things. I want to be wrong about the way that I feel about Blake Bortles. I'm curious to see if the evidence, when everything is said and done, is going to make that a reality. Let's get to the fan feedback spotlight, where outside of Blake, because we know he's the thing that's going to make this whole thing go. He is what all eyes are on is Blake Bortles, and they should be. He's the quarterback. He hasn't proven it yet that he's going to be the franchise. That fifth-year option is hanging over his head. Can he earn it? Or will the Jaguars make a decision to go another direction next offseason? Time will tell on that one. But outside of Blake Bortles, who is the next biggest make-or-break player on this Jaguars roster? Tyler, what did we get on Twitter?
Our friend Duval Doom said, got to go with Calais. Dante doesn't appear to have what it takes, which means we got to get a pass rush from somewhere else. Chris said Dante or Jason Myers. That was the only Jason Myers mention I saw on the question. Ocho Fisher said Miles Jack. Colby said, for me, it's a tie between Alan Hearns and Miles Jack. Brian said, I think the next most important guy this year is Leonard Fournette. A couple people waited and said Fournette had a make-or-break season, or this upcoming season would be a make-or-break for Leonard Fournette. Matt said, unfortunately, how can you not pick Dante? He makes some good plays. We need pressure and sacks. Big John needs to slap him pregame. Janet says Dante Fowler. Cameron says, pretty obvious it's Dante Fowler. His draft position and hype made him a target of scrutiny if he doesn't perform. Jumbo Pimp said Fournette. Ian said Allen Robinson. Interesting we didn't get more from him considering he had a down year last year looking to rebound in 2017 here. Jarrell said Miles Jack. Jag fan said AJ Boye. If he's a one-year wonder, it's going to hurt this defense dramatically this year. And Adrian said all eyes on 5-6. Then we relax when he puts up 12 sacks this year. And finally, from our friends at Bortles Facts on Twitter, Blake Bortles Facts. Blake Bortles has never lost a game with Leonard Fournette in the backfield.
So I guess that means his pick is officially Fournette.
I would say so.
I guess this is the direction he's going there.
They're
on,
basically saying Fournette will make Blake's season.
Yes. On Facebook, Adrian went through a lot, but basically it boiled down to Brandon Albert for him being the big acquisition on the offensive line. And if it doesn't work with him at that spot, then the domino effect on that offensive line from Josh Stewart. We got Allen Robinson. From Tommy, another vote there for Fournette. From Connor, A-Rob and Marquise Lee are candidates for this because both are competing for that number one wide receiver contract this year. It's possible the one who doesn't get the payday may suit up for another team next season. That is possible. Scott says he's torn between Fowler and A.J., but that being a third overall pick versus a third round pick weighs it in the favor of Dante Fowler being his pick for it. Look, I think when you look at it, I think it's a make-or-break season for Dante Fowler, right? Where I think for Fowler, this is the year where he really needs to take a step up and take that next step in his career. I'm not sure that how good or bad Dante Fowler is as big a make-or-break for the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? It's you don't want to miss on a first-round pick, but in that same position, if Yannick Ngakoue takes another step into his career, then you're at least have a little bit of a band-aid for whatever you're missing with Dante Fowler. It's still not good. It's not ever good to draft a pass rusher at number three overall. And if after his fourth year, you're like, all right, go do whatever you're going to do. That's never a good situation. But I don't think it's necessarily make or break for the Jaguars in regards to what Dante Fowler does. I think it is for Dante Fowler. I kind of feel the same way about AJ Cann, where I'm not sure how much better AJ Cann is than a bunch of the other names that we've talked about on that offensive line. I think it's a really important year for AJ. I think it would be really nice for the Jacksonville Jaguars if AJ stepped into his third year in the league and became the player that I think they thought he was going to be last year, and maybe even better than that. I think it would be really good for AJ Cann to take that step, because I do believe, you know, another year where if he has a season this year where the Jaguars feel like he's not good enough to start, he winds up kind of being a swing interior guy, then you're risking your future playing time in the league, where it's going to be difficult to start winning a starting job somewhere else, although we do see Luke Jokel starting in Seattle right now. But Jokel was the number two overall pick. AJ Cann was a third-round pick. It's a bit of a different story when it comes to that. I say all that to say, for me, I think because of the plan that they have in place, it's probably Fournette, and past that, it's Calais Campbell. For me, where they do need to find the pass rush, I believe Yannick Ngakoue is going to be as good and better than he was last year. I'm not sure that that means he's going to have double-digit sacks, but I think he's capable of it, starting at that right-end spot. I've said it over and over again. I don't think anybody knows what it looks like when they have somebody that can rush the passer from that left end. And I think Calais Campbell gives them that, so I think the pass rush should be better because of it, with him lining up next to Malik Jackson. But the offensive plan has been and remains run the ball. And if Leonard Fournette doesn't get going, and it's not all on him to get that thing going, that's on the offensive line too, but if Leonard Fournette and the Jaguars running game doesn't get going, then they're kind of stalled with what their entire offseason plan was offensively.
Tony, the question of the day,
they want to rely on Blake.
Yeah, the question of the day, you asked for the make or break player for the 2017 Jaguars season on the Duval Ford text line from the 382. Make or break Dave Caldwell. It is a big year for him too.
No doubt. No, I mean, it is, and a lot of that's Blake, right? I mean, and it may be that simple for Dave Caldwell. Does Blake work? Does Blake earn that fifth year? And if not, we'll see, right? I mean, I think they're just kind of in that situation. But for me, the biggest make or break is going to be whether or not they can run the ball, and that the biggest piece of that is Leonard Fournette. Because they don't want to have to rely on Blake Bortles. And if the running game isn't working, then they're looking at being a team that's going to throw the ball 35 times a game again. And I don't think anybody wants to see that from this team out of having to do it. If they do it because they want to, because Blake is playing super well and surprising everybody, that's a different story. But doing it because you have to, I think, would be bad news for the 2017 Jags. That'll do it for us here on a Thursday. Thanks again to John Osher for stopping by. Thanks to Tyler Devitt for an absent Mike Dempsey, who will be back in next week off his vacation. I'm Fat Tony. Mike DiRocco will join me in studio tomorrow for Jaguars Today. So we'll get a full 2 hours of D-Rock, and we'll welcome in the boys of the Midday Chalk next as we continue along. It is a Thursday right here on 1010 XL.
Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. I got a question for you. Who's hungry? Sometimes you just have that little bit of hunger. You need a little something to get you through. That time when that hunger is hitting you hard, try the new City Block Cheeseburger from Dandy. If you're really hungry, you get a third-pound charbroiled beef patty with cheddar cheese, a little Swiss cheese in there, mustard blend, and pickles on a big old rustic onion ciabatta square. So big, they call it the City Block altogether, an 11-ounce burger. Maybe you're going old school with the ham and cheese twist, the throwback Black Forest ham piled high with cheddar cheese, white mayo, and pickles on a fresh hand-braided brioche sub roll. Absolutely delicious. The June sandwich of the month, by the way, at Circle K, is the ultimate Italian, available for only $3.99. Capicola ham, Genoa salami, pepperoni, mozzarella on a Parmesan roll. Come on now. Who's not hungry now? Your mouth is watering. You know it is. Whatever the variety, you know the price is going to be good. And whenever you're hungry for food on the go, I tell you to do what I do, folks. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
Touch me not so near, yet I persuade myself to speak the truth. I'd rather this tongue cut from my throat than do offense to Michael Cassio.